your professional volunteer activities. And today we'd like to hear a little bit about your non-professional volunteer activities. I know, for example, that you've been in this Peace Now group.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what other, but we can start with Peace Now.
Okay. I have been active for many years in a number of political and social action groups. And Peace Now is one of the groups I've been part of for the last few years. And as we all know, it's a group that follows the program of Shalom Achshav in Israel, but is the American branch of that, and is probably not well received in the United States, and maybe not in Israel either, by fairly mainstream people who support or have historically supported the Likud party and all of the issues that surround that about the occupied territories and such. And it's been an interesting experience here because I am very active in the Jewish community, and it has often been received, I would say, fairly negatively. Issues about the issue of occupation, the issue of peace talks, the issues of trying to negotiate in order to get some kind of settlement between the Arabs and the Israelis. And I certainly at several meetings have been very openly criticized and attacked, with people going so far as to talk about Peace Now as being traitorous. I think it's a very significant issue for the American Jewish community. I mean, the substantive issues are significant, the issues of peace, the issues of what we're going to do in negotiating with Arabs, the issues of the occupied territories are substantive issues of great importance, and not just for Israelis, but for American Jews and for the world at large, are very, very significant. But beyond that, I think the American Jewish community is really struggling with the question of whether we do an injustice to Israel or are in fact disloyal if we dare to criticize. And there's been enormous pressure, I think, within the Jewish community to say we just don't ever, ever openly criticize. In fact, shouldn't even challenge, shouldn't even question what the Israeli government has done. Now that has been a consistent problem, I think, in the American Jewish community. And there are many like myself and other people also, I think, that really believe we're doing a grave injustice to Israel to not encourage the expression of a variety of viewpoints. For all of the people that believe that it was disloyal to ever criticize what the Israeli government has done, when the Labor Party won this last election, we're thrown into some confusion, I think, because all of a sudden now it wasn't the Likud party's approach, which has been very hard-line toward the Arabs and toward peace talks and certainly toward ceding or giving back any territory. We're faced with the fact that if you're going to be loyal to the government, now the government had a somewhat different line. Unfortunately, that line has not worked out so well for the Labor Party, what with the Lebanese, the situation of those Hamas folks that have been put between Israel and Lebanon. So, I mean, it's turned out to be a very sad time, I think, for Israel, a very sad time. But not everybody would agree with that. There are many that say it was a right action to exile or expel those folks, although I don't really think it's going to lead toward peace. I think Israel's in grave difficulty, and that one does have to think through what kind of policy could possibly bring this country to peace, if that's what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So that has been an interesting experience.
Were you active in any Zionist organization prior to Peace Now that you were drawn to Peace Now?
Active in Hadassah when I was home raising children, extremely so. I was a donor chair of Pittsburgh chapter the year before I came back to school for my doctorate.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very, very active with Hadassah. And both my husband and I are really confirmed Zionists. We really believe in Israel and will support Israel. It's inaccurate to characterize the Peace Now people as disloyal to Zionism and to Israel, because it's very clear, and the movement states that in its mission statement and its bylaws, that it is a very pro-Zionist organization, which is not to say that it is not willing to talk about peace talks with the Arabs.
When you joined the Peace Now, were you one of the original members here in Pittsburgh?
I guess I was.
It's been active that long.
I think we must have been. I think when we became part of it, I think it was just for, it's only a few years.
Yes.
And has not been active lately at all. I was chair for about a year and a half and then withdrew because I just was swamped with a lot of other things. And we haven't even had a meeting for some time now.
No, you haven't heard much about their activities.
We were very active for a while. Part of it is, I think, just somebody willing to take the responsibility to do it. And part of it, I think, is that with the Labour government in, et cetera, the picture does change somewhat.
Yes, yes. Are you active in, still in Hadassah?
Well, I'm a life member of Hadassah.
Yeah, but not as an active member.
No,
what other volunteer, as a non-professional activities have you joined in Pittsburgh?
Well, we've been active in a number of political campaigns. I've worked rather actively, quite actively, on Lynn Yagle's campaign, as did my husband. And so we've been consistently active in a number of political campaigns.
So political action is what you were primarily interested in.
Has been part of what we've done, right? And my husband's been a board member of ADA, Americans for Democratic Action.
Yes.
And we always participate in their activities and in the activities of Peace Links, which is another peace group that was founded by Betty Bumpers, Dale Bumpers' wife, and is really now international in nature to promote discussions about peace with the Russians.
Oh,
of course, now the Cold War is over, and
but
Peace Links goes on. Yes,
it does.
Yes, they do.
Do they transfer to some other country?
Well, they always did a lot of outreach, not only to Russia but to China, and really wanted to diminish the threat of nuclear war, amongst other things. And it was many of the people that have been active with Peace Links are also people who are active with the Physicians for Social Responsibility and so forth, all of whom have been people that have worked against the use of nuclear weapons in war and worked against war. So we've been active in that. I've been very active in the past with the Pittsburgh Council of Public Education. I'm past president of that group, and that's a group that works in the Pittsburgh area to support the public schools and has been very active over many years, up and down, but I'm very active. One of the founders was Dr. Eddy, who used to be the president at Chatham, and that's gone on for many years.
Have you accomplished some ends in terms of getting people to send their children to public schools?
I think it's been because I haven't heard of their activities. Oh, they're more active now because they finally got some money and they have a staff person and whatever. In the days in which I was president, it was volunteer the whole way. So they are actually better organized and function in sort of hand in glove with the Pittsburgh schools.
Have their goals been in terms of urging parents to send their children to public schools or improving the public schools?
Both. Both. And they do some really interesting and important work, I think, in trying to keep the quality of the public schools as high as possible, but also to encourage people to have a commitment to the public schools.
Yes.
And not to abandon them. And there's a great deal of threat, I think, to the public schools at this point. The whole voucher system,
Right.
et cetera, is a significant threat to the public schools of this country. So that, I think, has been an important group.
Good. Now, several of the groups that you mentioned, you said we belong, meaning you and your husband.
Right.
Aside from this public education group, are there other groups where the interest or the purpose of the group stirs up your interest alone?
Not usually. I mean, usually we're both equally interested. We may not both be equally active, you know, in terms of choosing how to spend our time, but usually sharing an interest. I mean, rarely would we be in conflict.
Good. And while your children were growing up and you were not professionally involved, you mentioned that you were in Hadassah. Were you in any other ways
active? I was very active with the neighborhood. Our neighborhood was full of active people. I was very active with the PTA. I was president of the Sunnyside PTA and then ultimately of the Peabody PTA. Very, very active in the school.
You have?
The schools always. And both of us were, but I was an officer and was very, very active. We had the most active Sunnyside, the PTA at Sunnyside.
Well, Sunnyside must have been relatively new at that time when your children started.
Well, we
started.
Got a new building in 1954.
Right.
The old building had been there for the street for many years. A new building was built in 1954.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, we had 100% membership of the families in our neighborhood for years and years and years. It was
Why do you think that was so?
Well, I think it was a young community and... I mean, the community wasn't young as much as the people that lived there were young,
right.
And half the community was young, half of it was built post-World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And it had lots of women with lots of energy who were not in the workplace yet, and so they put their energies into organization.
Mm-hmm.
So we had active everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, I chaired the recreation committee, we started a garden club. We have, PTA was excessively active. I mean, people begged to be on the board. People wanted to be part of it. And we had a very active Hadassah group, which still is functioning, by the way, although I think it's now taken
area.
In some East End people. It's sort of merged with another group. Very active in Abra. And some activity of a substantial nature of other Jewish organizations, Orton and so forth. And very active in the sisterhood at B'nai Israel, where many of the people that lived in that community went at that point.
Were you active in that?
Yes, I wrote plays. I used to write plays and
really?
Such, and I wrote some of the plays that they would have.
For the sisterhood?
For the sisterhood.
Did you participate in them too?
Yeah, I usually directed them. And our PTA had plays that we did a lot, I always did a lot
I
of
I didn't know you were
for.
A writer.
Uh-huh. And we had wonderful shows. At the
you did.
We would fill the auditorium for nights upon end, and they were wonderful. I mean, it was that kind of community where everybody, a lot of very creative people, and everybody wanted to participate. So you had people beating down the doors in that period. That's not true now.
No,
but
I know.
Then it was very true, just beating down the doors.
But they were fortunate to have you if you
Well, there were a lot of other wonderful
plays.
People, too. I mean,
yes.
We really had a very talented bunch of folks. And then I helped to start the orchestra that we had at the East End Ikes. We had an East End Ikes down at the corner of Stanton and Negley that now is Craig House Technoma.
Mm-hmm.
And we had an orchestra that we got Anna Lauf Perlow to come and direct. She was the head of the music school.
Adults or children?
Adults. And we played for years.
Uh-huh.
I think it sort of fell apart when I came back to school for the
what
doctoral
did you play?
Program. Violin.
Oh. Did your husband also play an instrument?
He plays the piano. He wasn't
in so he wasn't allowed in the orchestra.
Well, we didn't have a place for him in that orchestra.
Right.
But we did have a wonderful group. They have an orchestra now up at the Squirrel Hill.
Yes, Ike, that I know.
But JCC. But ours was, I think, more Hamisha, a group. We didn't audition them. We did give concerts, but we did not expect that people would treat us as professional musicians, since we didn't think of ourselves as such. I think now they've gotten a little more fancy.
So you were
about
active
it.
At the East Liberty JCC?
Oh, yes, I was president of their board.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
You really were active.
I was the first woman president of any Jewish community center in this city.
Oh.
The Ikes and the Y both, and which were the two groups that merged to form JC, had never had a woman president.
So this was, they had their own board separate from...
the overall board.
The Y and the JCC and Squirrel Hill, each one had their own
each
board?
Had, yeah. There was an overall board, too.
There
but
was.
Each of the branches of the centers had
I didn't
a board.
Know that. Mm-hmm. So you were head of the JCC branch companies.
Yeah, it was the East End Ikes. There, they had changed it to JCC, yeah.
How many years were you on the board there?
Oh, I was on the board for a lot of years. I was president, I think, for 4 years, I think, maybe three. That was in the early 60s.
Yeah, so you really kept quite active with
kept
that
kept going, group. Yes.
And did you participate in any of the other, were your children
Oh, our children all used the Ikes actively, so.
And then
I was on the overall board for some years.
You
also.
Were? Mm-hmm. Have you been in it recently?
No, not at all.
When the children go, it changes a bit, right?
Yeah, so we haven't even been members for a long time because we haven't, they closed the East End Ikes
for one thing.
But we haven't been because
there
were just...
What do you think happened there that it closed?
Well, I think a number of things. One of the disadvantages of that building was that it didn't have a pool or a gym.
Right.
So it was very hard for it to compete. So that was one of the things that happened. And then there were some other competitive activities that were going on in other places. B'nai Israel for a while started a whole program, and I think that got quite competitive with the Ikes. I felt that was unfortunate, but it did happen. And then it was just difficult for them to maintain it monetarily, fiscally.
Yes.
Much more of the community in the East End of Pittsburgh at that point and continuingly are with many, many older people, not that Squirrel Hill doesn't, but I think a higher percentage, and probably somewhat lower income.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think fiscally it became difficult to maintain, and the organization wasn't willing to keep putting money into it, which is what we thought they should do. But
was there a change in population numbers, too, of the Jewish community in East End?
Staten Heights has changed, but I think that really actually happened after they closed the East End. I mean, there's been a marked change, which has a massive impact on B'nai Israel, which is fading away
now. You mean
there.
Now?
Oh, yes, yes. Massive impact.
Because there are fewer young Jewish families.
There are fewer young Jewish families, and so it's a very aging congregation,
yes.
Which I'm sure is true of Margaretta Street also, or
Adolph
Jesher. But I think, actually, the central board had closed, excuse me, the East End Ikes before the massive change in the East End Ikes.
But there must have been some changes in getting fiscal support, and earlier they had.
Well, they always have put money into it.
I see.
So they were unwilling to keep doing it.
What do you think accounts for this change in the view of the public school? You talk about how active everybody wanted to be active. Everybody wanted to help their children in the school and improve the school. Evidently, that's not so today.
Well, I think there are several things that have happened. One is racism has emerged once more. I think the whole effort to integrate schools drove a lot of white folks right out of the school system. I mean, they did. People will always deny that. That's why they sought out the private schools or went to the suburbs.
Right.
But I'm convinced it was. And, I mean, underneath all that, there was real discomfort over integration. That was one thing. The second was that people started earning more money and could afford to go to private schools. If that was their inclination, then they could earlier. I think people just got more prosperous.
But in terms of the curriculum, it was evidently still similar to what you had and a good curriculum. It wasn't the academic level that had gone down.
Well, people said it was, though. People
they did.
Said that with integration, et cetera, you would pull down the level of the public schools. I mean, I think there was just overt racism in all of that, but not always recognized by people.
Mm-hmm.
Or they want their children in a situation in which there were a lot of black kids. They could never quite define always what that was about. Sometimes it was the academic, sometimes it was the social life, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was, it's a, you know, a serious problem all over the country.
Yeah, now it is. But as you recall, when your children, for example, moved out of Sunnyside, went off to, was at that time the population changing?
In our
was it sudden? Yeah, was it sudden or was
no,
it a gradual?
The first black person that moved into Staten Heights was Dr. Dickens, the obstetrician, and Dr. Dickens came in, I'm trying to remember, in the late 60s, I think, maybe early 70s, when all of that happened. And the neighbors signed a petition at the instigation of the property owner of the Stanton Heights Shopping Center, who also was the owner of much of the property that was being built on at that point, near the shopping center on Rosecrest and such. And Mr. Taunton did send his lawyer around to neighbors on that street to sign a petition to keep him out. And it went to the Human Relations Commission.
Keep he and his family from living there?
From buying that house. And that was, I think, the late 60s. Marion Finkelhor was the city solicitor at that point, because she handled the case for the city. And it was horrifying. And she had contacted a number of us and asked us to talk to people. We got the rabbi from B'nai Israel to come around and talk to the people that were on that petition. And they all denied that it was race. What else would it be? Here was this man who had far better income than most of them, who was a doctor, who had a wonderful collection of art. I mean, he was a great art collector. And
what was his first name, Bob?
Oswald Dickens.
Dickens.
And his children never went to the public school. They went to Winchester Thurston, so they were much more upper class, I think. I mean, it was, if you're going to deal with class issues,
yes,
they were far more upper class than most of the people living on that street. But there it was. It did happen. And once that happened, the case got resolved with the people that signed the petition withdrawing because they were threatened with having their names put in the paper. And none of them wanted to. I mean, they all knew how really racist this was. They had to know. But nobody wanted, therefore, nobody wanted their names in the paper. So when that threat came, that they were going to put the names in the paper, which should have happened to the people that signed this petition, it was public information, I would think, they withdrew, and then black people started to buy houses in Stanton Heights. Interestingly, they bought the most expensive houses, as did Dickens. I mean, along Rosecrest and Somersville, those are the areas that have the most expensive houses in Stanton Heights. And that is where the largest amount of black movement is. Because there was a huge backlog of demand by middle class and upper middle class black people for houses.
I mean,
they had great trouble in this city buying decent houses.
So anywhere. Most of these blacks must have been professional?
Yes, a lot of them are Pitt people, a lot of them are Carnegie Mellon people. I mean, they're largely, not totally, but largely a quite upper middle class group, probably better educated than the people that lived, clearly so, and probably had, in many of them, not all of them, better incomes. I mean, Dickens clearly did,
right,
with his original art collection, his children going to Winchester Thurston, when nobody else was really sending kids to private schools, nobody else in that neighborhood, and in most neighborhoods. But that, so that history goes way back.
Was his office in that area?
No,
too?
No.
He was at McGee Hospital, and I don't know, his office was
you
somewhere here.
You must have had some
Oakland.
Personal contact with him because you know of his art collection.
Oh, yes, oh, yes.
You've been to his home?
Uh-huh. But he never really wanted to mingle with the neighborhood. I could well understand it.
Yes.
And he did desire to buy this house because he was trying to have a test case. He just wanted a house. So at the instant they were able to reach some settlement, he withdrew the case from the Human Relations Commission. He was really not trying to
it
have a case.
It was the Human Relations Committee then who threatened that the names would go into the newspaper. I wondered who you
well,
were.
Well, the city solicitor who had the case for the city was Marion, urged that the names be printed. Once we, I mean, they did contact a number of us to talk to people, and we all did, to not much avail. And once they gave up on the moral persuasion approach, then they said, well, people should know, you know, who signed this petition. And people really didn't want their names there. So the case did then get settled.
So
also, as it happened, somebody had a divorce, a very ugly divorce, and was anxious to sell her house. So she sold her house. It was not the original house Dr. Dickens tried to buy, but she was hardly interested in social issues at that point. She wanted out, and so all of those things combined.
So there was a real split in your community.
Oh yes, serious.
Did the synagogue do anything to help
heal
this?
Well, I would wish I could say yes. The rabbi, they've had a couple different rabbis, of course. The rabbi that was there when this case was going on did actively enter into talking to the signers,
oh,
as did a number of us, and tried to convince them to take their names off and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Then another rabbi came, and when we were, and I was very actively engaged in the school board activity around school integration. The Pittsburgh system was under a court order to integrate the city schools.
Wow.
And I was on the reorganization advisory committee that the school board set up,
mm-hmm.
which came up with a set of recommendations about integration because of the court order, etc. And when we came out with our recommendations, all hell broke loose, and our phone rang day and night with threatening, vile, obscene phone calls for weeks and weeks and weeks. It got to the point where we could not let our children answer the telephone. And it was a big, big hoo-ha, many threatening, terrible phone calls, etc. So we had come through with that. We were a citywide committee appointed by the school
citywide.
Board.
It
wasn't
just
for our neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that was got very ugly and very terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But the push was on from the State Human Relations Commission to meet guidelines, which
nice.
Were not being met for
right.
integration. And
right.
so we did make a rather radical, I mean, we just said, if you're going to do it fast, get it over with, don't mess around with it. You know, just don't drag it out. And people will get over it. People will, if you do a really good constructive program of working with people, people won't stay quite so adamant.
Angry.
And I think that was good advice. They didn't exactly do it because there was such a fuss made, such a hoo-ha through the whole city of Pittsburgh, and such carries on. That is part of what ultimately led, that was then an appointed school board to an elected school board.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot, because people thought if they elected the school board, they'd get a bunch of people that would put black kids in their neighborhood. Well, meanwhile, the houses were selling in Staten Heights. And as I say, largely at that point, the houses that black people were moving into were the most expensive houses. Sort of the Gold Coast of,
mm-hmm.
of Staten Heights, and it stayed, we now have black people really scattered all through Staten Heights. It's a well-integrated neighborhood.
It is.
Wonderful. But those areas where those expensive houses are, the Gold Coast, so to speak, have stayed more black than the rest of the neighborhood.
I see. So that really, like one of those streets has not integrated.
Well, it
that
has
much.
Lots of black folks out there.
Mm-hmm.
And but on our block, for example, we have 12 houses, and we have I think three black families, and the rest are white families. We've had young white families buy houses on our street.
Mm-hmm.
It's not only black families that are buying houses, but in general, the younger people are black and the older people are white, which says something about where it's going to be 10 years from now.
Right.
But we have had on our street and other streets too a number of young white families that have bought houses.
What did you think of the Jewish community's reaction to this?
Stunning. Stunning.
What
I mean,
no matter
how much they claim they are not racist, there is no question what's going on. At that time it was disgraced. I mean, there were a lot of us that were good, sturdy souls.
Right.
But in terms of, I started to talk about the day and then sort of wandered away
right.
from that. There were a number of hearings about the reorganization proposals at the school board.
Mm-hmm.
And I was totally horrified when the rabbi, the then rabbi, and the president of the board, who lives in Staten Heights, still lives there, came and talked against the reorganization plan because they said it would interfere, if they bused kids, it would interfere with kids going to Hebrew school. And I have to tell you, I was horrified.
Mm-hmm.
And I did get up and speak
good.
In opposition, and I got literally booed by some of my neighbors because I said those things. and because they were there to support B'nai Israel, which should never have done that. And so then a group of us who belonged to B'nai set up a meeting with the rabbi to talk about our distress at the rabbi having entered into this, which we felt he should never have done. And he was just outrageous. I mean, he absolutely would not listen to us at all. He said he was a liberal and we should respect. He had gone to Selma, apparently, or whatever. And our point that we were trying to make, which he would not listen to, was that the synagogue should not put itself in opposition to the black community in this way, that it's very damaging to do that.
Right.
And he would not listen. So that's when we left B'nai Israel.
Mm-hmm. Because a group left,
well,
besides you,
a number of us left.
What was this rabbi's name?
That was Schechter that time around, who has since left some years ago.
Yes.
We thought that he had handled that excessively poorly. I really was horrified that a synagogue would come and make
it's
that kind of
pitch. It's interesting that the there's a rabbinical group in Pittsburgh, that there wouldn't have been some comments from them where one of their colleagues is non-supportive of.
Well, most of them probably supported him for all we know.
I mean,